is this little girl in the gospel story this morning? Of what or of whom is she a symbol and a message for us? Is the message given by Jesus through this little girl that those who believe and trust, when they suffer untimely death of their children, need only come to Jesus in faith and say, bring her back, bring him back, and Jesus will do it? Is that the message? If it were, what a challenge to the preacher out there in Fairfax this morning, where a 16-year-old girl lies dead after an automobile accident earlier this week. Should the family rightly go to the church, hear this gospel proclaimed, and plead with the preacher to come to the place of their grieving and say these magic words, Talitha Koum, which means, little girl, get up again? Is that the message? Is Jesus telling us this morning that when death strikes and takes someone we love, whether in the flower of youth or in the pain of old age and illness, that we need only turn to him and he will pronounce a magic word and call that person back? The answer is so obvious, it need not be belabored. And yet, in a sense, it is a symbol and a message for all who grieve, for that little girl called back in that miraculous moment is a sign of God's power as he calls every child and every elder, every human being who ever dies back to life in a fullness of life, the ultimate promise, our ultimate hope of life hereafter. She is a symbol of all that, put in concrete, specific, historic terms that even the most faithless were challenged to rethink the meaning of life. She is a sign of all who die, for whom others grieve, that Jesus will call those who have died not back to this life, but into the fullness of life forever. But this little girl is a sign of something even more than that, of all who die our natural death, timely or untimely though it be. She is a symbol of every hope and dream, every movement, every effort, every concerted plan of God's people to make his will be done. In times when our best efforts seem fruitless and all of our most courageous deeds seem mocked by events and hostile reactions around us, this little girl this morning is symbol of all that. And to us all who have ever dreamed dreams in harmony with the gospel, to each and every one of us who ever put our hands or our hearts to the task of bringing the Spirit of Jesus to life in the midst of God's people, to each and to all of us, Jesus is saying, do not give up when the slumber of indifference, when the death of hostility and opposition from the godless and the faithless seem to have overwhelmed your dreams, your efforts. Do not give up. See this not as death, but slumber, and believe that God in Jesus will call all the dreams and all the hopes and all the heartfelt labors and efforts of God's people back to life, to fruition, and to fulfillment. It's a very challenging message. It's a message that Jesus has sounded to God's people down through the ages. A message still repeated by him, by the church, in the face of all sorts of apparent contradictions and mockeries of such a message. It is a message that has been put forth from the days when the first Christians were pitted against the gladiators and the lions and suffered such an incredibly total defeat and humiliation. From that to these very days, in the experience of Mother Teresa in the streets of Calcutta, lifting up and embracing yet another infant about to breathe its last. It is a promise pitted against the experience of God's people from the martyrdom of the first apostles and disciples of Jesus, who stood up and said, God is love, and we are called to be one family in our brother Jesus, from the destruction, the utter devastation of the lives of those first apostles, all the way to the assassination of Oscar Romero, to the brutal killing of the four church women, and to the yet more recent slaughter of the Jesuits and their companions for having tried to teach truth to the modern world. This promise that every apparent death, every seeming defeat is but a slumber, and life will be renewed and somehow come to a greater fullness, is a message we must try to accept, to understand, and to act upon in the face of all these seeming contradictions. It is a message the church resounds down through the ages, through the period of the sacking of monasteries and churches, at another point in history when the church was seen as enemy of the good. Through that shameful historic period, when the institutional church itself in the Inquisition put people to death with brutality and called it God's will through the hands of the church. It is a message that must somehow or other come through the days of the Holocaust, when Christian people put to death millions of their own sisters and brothers in the name of some sacrilegious purifying of the human race. It is a message people are meant to hear and from which they are expected by God to draw hope in the face of slavery and humiliation, being treated as things rather than people time and time again in historic experience. There is a key. Indeed, there are several keys to a better understanding, to perhaps a greater possibility of having hope renewed and trust increased. In the very readings of this day's liturgy, for those who will read carefully, listen attentively, and if necessary, force their hearts and minds open to hear the message of God. How ironic that in this gospel story of the wonder worker coming along and with such simplicity and ease saying to the child dead, get up. Then turning to the people and saying, now you feed her. Jesus, wonder worker of the bread and the fish, who called the dead back to life, who healed the lame with a glance or a touch, saying to the people, even in the context of this miraculous moment, you give her some food. There's a powerful hint there of how this message stays alive, how this hope is rekindled in a people, because instead of railing against God for his apparent indifference, we look to ourselves and examine our own sins, our own failures in sharing and caring, in healing and helping the bereaved and the heartbroken. Some will say, how dare God speak to such a beleaguered people as we are these days, telling us in the words of the Book of Wisdom, the first reading today, how dare God tell us there is not a single creature made by God that is evil? And even explicitly, there's not an evil drug among them. How dare any lector repeat those words or preacher try to put meaning to them in a society where families are being devastated, babies are being born broken and sick through the misery and malady of drugs? How can God say there's not an evil drug? Because God dares, because God knows everything that was made for good. It is in the refashioning of the purpose of creatures, by creatures, that evil comes. And the least we can do, sisters and brothers, creatures who play God, creatures who abuse, misuse, and trample upon God's gifts, the least we could do is take responsibility and blame for the ways in which we have perverted his precious and mysterious gifts. All things, the scripture says, created by God are good. Therefore, we must search and struggle for their deeper meaning and discover, at whatever price, their divinely destined purpose, and refashion our own behavior and priorities to be in harmony with this great hymn of creation, which God orchestrated and we have so discordantly abused. The secret of the atom brought death and destruction in incredible, mind-boggling dimensions. And yet we know that that secret, fashioned to use with a sense of stewardship over creation, opens doors and possibilities for a better life and a richer experience of creation, if only all things are put to God's purpose and not our own. In our time, with people present at this very liturgy who have seen their families devastated and relationships broken because of alcoholism and drunkenness, God is still speaking, saying, there was no evil in the grain, but in the use of the alcohol it produces, there are often mad and foolish and destructive things done by my children. There is another hint. No, I shouldn't say hint. It's so blatant. Only those willing to close their eyes and minds and hearts to the Word of God could miss it. There is a message in the second reading. It is said so clearly how we bring about this renewal of life, this rekindling of hope. The relief of others, the apostle says, ought not impoverish you. There should be a certain equality. Your plenty at the present time should supply their need so that their surplus may in turn one day supply your need with equality as the result. It is written, the one who gathered much had no excess, and the one who gathered little had no lack. If there is a kind of hovering spirit of death over us and our ventures and our efforts and our collective experience as the family of God is not the answer contained in those very words. How dare a people expect God to keep a promise of new life and new hope if that people are engaged selfishly and single-mindedly in turning God's creative genius to their own advantage, to their selfish aggrandizement, and to the exclusion of the poor and the needy? We must ask ourselves the question often. Is it in any way true what so many self-styled experts would tell us? There's really not enough food to go around. There are too many mouths to be fed. Will we bow to the academic credentials of those who claim the earth is too small for so great a population? There's not enough space for us all? Or will we at last individually and as a people understand that the key is in the sharing, not in the arrogating to oneself of surplus beyond decency, but the allocating of God's blessings and riches to all in their human needs? We know the answer. These days, Father Kelly and I are not at all subtle or indirect in our effort to challenge all of you of this parish, in particular through these articles we keep publishing in the bulletin each week and which we hope you're saving and will reread from time to time. We're not at all subtle in saying to you the latest encyclical of the Pope somehow or other epitomizes the challenge in a marvelous way. People on the right are saying, at last the Pope has blessed our form of capitalism. The argument is over. We can get on with business as usual. And many on the left are saying, the Pope has abandoned us. And the truth is somewhere in between. In fact, wouldn't it be easy? Wouldn't, in a certain sense, life be a lot simpler if God would speak through the Pope or through the scriptures and tell us that one particular political system is the answer to it all? But God does not. God challenges us in our human fashioning of things to constantly seek and re-seek His will and His way in our human endeavors. And we must find a way to make what works politically work in faith and in the spirit of the gospel. There's our challenge.